whole process. Are there any
Yeah. Well, I think probably the first and major practice is the traditional Buddhist one of learning to be mindful of your sensations as sensations, of your feelings as feelings, of your thoughts as thoughts, and your volitions as volitions. What so often happens is we get caught up in our interpretations. You know, there's the famous one, isn't it? You are angry with me. But actually, I don't know whether you're angry with me or not. I don't know whether you're acting or whether I've just, you know, the light has just caught your corner of your mouth in a way that made me think you were, or whatever. But I'm convinced by my own interpretation of what's happened. So the first thing to do is the classic Buddhist one of just being mindful of what's going on in a relatively pure way. So you apply mindfulness, smriti, to your sparsha, to your contact, to your sensations. You just try to be aware of those sensations. That's what you're doing in the mindfulness of breathing. You're learning just to experience the sensation and to minimize or at least weaken the interpretation, and so on. So mindfulness is the first implication of this, learning to be more able to discriminate what is going on and detach yourself from the interpretations. You notice them, but you don't get caught up in them and lost in them. You mean we have some sort of view which influences the way? Yes, that's what Yogacara is doing. It's suggesting a sort of theoretical interpretive structure which allows us to be mindful in a way that will bring us to a true and valid experience. Yes, yeah, yeah. That's what Buddhist views are. They are interpretations, but they're interpretations that bring us closer to the way things really are. And what you're trying to do is to leap from the view to a direct understanding, to no view, if you like. So yes, Yogacara idea that everything is just experience, if you can get to grips with it. I would say my own personal practice is based mainly on that view. That's the way I try to look at things and try to shape my own reflection and mindfulness on the basis of that view. There are other possible views you could take, but I find this particular one very powerful.
But this keeps on coming to my mind, something that this feels that, although we're talking, this is a psychological model, but somehow it just kind of feels that it's moving beyond.
It depends what you mean by psychological. I mean merely that it's a structuring of mind, of psyche. But of course it means much more than that. It's not merely psychological in the diminutive sense.
I meant more also in terms of what I was saying about kind of the transpersonal, more to do with consciousness.
I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, it feels like it's moving beyond
yeah,
that.
Indefinitely. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. It's a model to allow you to experience something that's beyond the model, to open you up to something that's bigger than it. Yeah.
This point, you're saying that the experiencing situation is an inwardly part,
yeah,
an outwardly part.
Yeah.
It's acceptable to say that. It's acceptable to say that.
Indeed. Yeah.
And is the misinterpretation of this strand as a subject object?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And is it the alia that is responsible for that?
Well, it's the alia that is the basis on which we make that mistake. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because it's the alia that's serving up experience to us. And it's serving up the habitual, it's serving them up in ways that accentuates the habits that we've formed in the past. Yeah. But I found that almost revelatory, you know, being able to make that distinction between experience having an inherent inward and outward aspect to it, and the imputation into that of existential realities. In accordance with causes and in accordance with conditions, yeah.
Yeah, I was understanding that by the process of our karma and our way of thinking, we open the door for certain things or not.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah. That's right, yeah. Yeah.
So it's serving them up, but we're opening the door.
Well, we put them in there, so they come out.
And they come out when we've recreated the conditions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. But yeah, again, right now, what's going on has emerged from the alia. That is, you know, this. And it's shaped by, it's served up in this particular way because of the consciousness that you formed in the past. You've created the alia that is the basis for this present situation. Ah, I think I see what you mean, yeah, yeah.
That a mirror reflects.
Right.
Around it,
yeah.
Depending on what you see,
I see what you mean, yeah.
So changing your conditions would be rather like moving yourself.
Yeah, yeah. The danger of that metaphor would be, or simile, would be that it implied that all you had to do was to move to a different place. But actually, what you need to do is to—it's a much more much more long-term and complicated, no, sophisticated process. If you see what I mean, you need to be working to change your perspective. It's not just that you decide, "Oh, I'm going to look at things differently." You can do that to a limited extent, of course, and that's where spiritual practice comes in. But in the end, what you're trying to do is to put influences out which change the structure of your consciousness.
Yeah, I've got another complicated thing to talk about. Does that mean to a certain extent there's a certain amount of self-determination in the Ala itself? I'm just thinking about people who come to the classes at the beginning. Are they already preordained as future Buddhists?
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Ali has brought them to the class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to understand.
Sure.
The
Yeah.
How that,
yeah.
Do you see what
I'm saying? It can all get rather literalistic when one starts to try to work it out. And it's very common in Buddhist circles, particularly, for instance, in Tibetan circles. We also get it in Far Eastern Buddhism as well. The idea that everything that happens is sort of meant and the result of what happened in the past, and in a certain sense that is true, but it's that almost makes it absurdly too simple. But there must be some sort of affinity.
Yeah, I quite like the idea, because otherwise, yeah. otherwise you get this situation where you know, everything's just tabula rasa.
Yeah, right.
You just
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
On some event, yeah. In, you know, yeah. Crusade about Buddhism.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember when I first realized that Buddhism had some strong message for me, I suddenly saw it everywhere. I must have heard of Buddhism many, many times before that, but suddenly when I heard about it, I saw it. I remember when I really read Buddhism for the first time and realized this was the truth that I wanted to understand. I remember going outside, and there was a newspaper, what do you call it, placard, which had the word Buddhism on it. And, you know, I suddenly find that people were reading books on trains and things like that. So presumably they've been doing that before, but my consciousness had sort of...
Existential.
Yes, had somehow connected with that whole realm. So there's some sort of law of affinity, you could say. That sometimes I remember Bhante saying that you thought you could describe the law of karma more in terms of a law of affinity, like attracts like, so that your actions in the past attract to you the experiences that are, as it were, proportional to your past actions.
Yeah,